Everybody, welcome to the Break It Up podcast. This is my dad's show. I hope you don't get butt hurt. This show has a lot of opinions. Some you might agree with, and some you won't. This show is not suitable for children. My name is Adrian, and welcome to the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Break It Up podcast. Welcome to 2019. This is the first episode of 2019, and I'm glad you're joining me. I hope your holidays and your New Year party and whatever it was a great one. And speaking of great ones, I got a guest who is a great one. His name is Qasim Rashid. He is a practicing attorney, author, and a podcast host of the Recite Islam podcast. And he's going to tell us all about himself and tell us some information we need to know. Qasim, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing all right so far. It's a cold day in South Dakota, but other than that, we're alive, I guess. Getting started, actually, just tell me your background. Tell me about yourself, you know, your books, your podcast, your website, your movements. Just tell me a little bit of everything about you and what your mission is.
I'm just a guy, man. I like to write. I'm into activism on things I care about. You know, people ask me about my identity all the time, and that's something that I've spent a lot of years understanding about myself. And you know, my identity as a Muslim, my identity as an American, as a lawyer. And what's cool is I found that by investing the time to really understand each of those identities, you learn how they interact with one another, and you learn how to be more confident in who you are and in what you're trying to achieve. And so it's through that end that I've written books on Islam, on human rights, on religious freedom, why I went to law school, why I had a Harvard University fellowship, and kind of all these things, why I tweet what I tweet, and why I have my Recite Islam podcast. So, you know, I could bore your listeners with my resume, but I don't think they want to hear that either. you know, but I think they might be more interested in hearing about things like racial justice and gender equality, religious freedom. Those are kind of the three main things I try to talk about. Oh, and dad jokes.
I did see that on your Twitter that's one of the things you like to be known for. And so you're a married man and you have three kids, is that correct?
Three wonderful kids, yeah.
Three wonderful kids. I have two daughters myself, and hopefully right now they're not going to be doing a whole lot of running around because I record in my basement and it's not very well insulated. So when they're running around, sometimes you can pick it up in the background, but hopefully my wife is wrangling them right now.
When we moved to where we are right now, we made an extension in the master bedroom to put our office up here because the idea of being in the basement and the kids running around upstairs, it just wasn't happening. So we tried to preempt that by being on the top floor so the sound doesn't carry up here as well.
That's a pretty solid idea, and hopefully someday I'll maybe have like my own studio or something, but I think my wife thinks we need other things in our lives right now, but you know, she's the boss around here, so I just have to kind of listen.
Well, then it sounds like you married up, so that's a good thing.
I definitely married out of my league, that's for sure. That's what people tell me. So tell me, with the work that you're doing, and like you said, you do a lot of social activism, and one of the things that I kind of wanted to be able to talk with you about is kind of the problems that we're seeing today in today's world with the misinformation and the misconceptions about Islam and, you know, people of the Muslim faith or Islamic faith. It's we're kind of living in a world right now, especially in Western culture in the United States, where anytime you hear the term Muslim or something, automatically people, especially in more uncultured areas, are going to associate that with terrorism. What is the biggest difference that you wish you could kind of tell people about the difference between modern Islam and what the, you know, the extremism is that's going on overseas?
I think the best analogy I can provide is just as any Christian wouldn't want to be judged by the KKK and the mass murders and lynchings that they committed and even, you know, to some extent commit today, no Muslim wants to be judged by groups like the Taliban or Al-Qaeda. You know, every group has these fundamentalists, these extremists, and they exist as an extreme element for reasons outside of what the religion teaches. You know, nobody can convince me that Jesus Christ said to enslave Africans and commit genocide of the Native Americans. It's ludicrous to come to such a conclusion. And I know that because I've studied the Bible and I have Christian friends and I've gone to church with them and I've understood Christianity from their perspective. And so to really understand Islam, you're not going to find it by Googling. You're not going to find it by watching news media. And I don't mean conservative media or liberal media. I mean media in general, because whether it's conservative or liberal, both have done a pretty terrible job on educating the public on Islam or on Muslims. It's one reason why I started the Recite Islam podcast. But right now, if I were to give you an example of what Islam is, I think one really good example I can give you right now is the story of Muslim Youth USA sending dozens of members, close to 100 members, to five national parks around the country, including the National Mall in D.C., to clean up the garbage and to do it as volunteers and to make it an interfaith effort. And I mean, this, you know, a couple of days ago, I was at the National Mall in D.C., you know, emptying trash cans, cleaning up garbage and trying to do my part to serve my community, to serve my country. This is what Islam is. You know, service to humanity isn't just a part of Islam. It's the single most important part of Islam. And anyone who fails in that aspect of it is failing as a Muslim. There's a very famous saying of the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, peace be upon him, who said that that person is not even a believer, is not even a Muslim, if they go to bed with their stomach full and their neighbor goes to bed hungry. And so this was the level of compassion and comfort that the Prophet taught Muslims. He didn't say your Muslim neighbor or your scholar neighbor. He just said your neighbor, whether they're Muslim or not, whether they believe in God or not, whoever they are. If they're a human being and they're going to bed hungry, then you are failing in your responsibility as a Muslim, and you can't even call yourself a Muslim at that point. So, you know, that kind of knowledge only comes by actually interacting with Muslims and getting to know them. And, you know, that's why I'm grateful to folks like you, because you're opening a door to your listeners and to your contacts that they may not have access to otherwise. And I hope that for those who are listening to this interview and hearing from a Muslim for the first time, that this isn't your last time and you keep that conversation going.
With what you were saying with it's a teaching, it's part of the faith to, you know, be there for your neighbors. And we see that in many different faiths, you know, Christian faith, Judaism, and many other faiths across the world. But why is it that it seems – is it just a media thing or arrogance thing that so many people want to just automatically assume that the Islamic faith is one of violence?
Well, I think it's a combination of ignorance, you know, media ratings, but also, you know, failed Muslim leadership. You'll never hear me defend the political regimes that are, you know, running Saudi Arabia or Iran right now. They're both complete failures in my opinion, because they're not upholding justice, they're not upholding fairness, they're not upholding religious freedom, which are all things the Quran teaches are incumbent. There's also, you know, a failure of U.S. foreign policy. You know, since 1990, for example, Western bombs have killed over 4 million Muslim civilians. And, you know, this is documented. It's in university studies, you know, by scholars all over the world. But think about that, 4 million. You know, think about the pain that 9/11 caused us as Americans when 3,000 of our fellow Americans were killed.
Right.
Now imagine if 4 million were killed, what kind of an impact would that have? And so, you know, there's this, you know, multi-pronged, you know, reality that we need to be cognizant of. You know, and here in the United States, for example, there's simply a lack of education on this very important world religions, you know, second largest religion in the world, followed by 1.6 billion people. And the level of awareness is just, it's very low. And so you have a very unique combination of lack of education with a lot of fear mongering, and it results in a very, very difficult and very bad reputation. And so that's where I think it's incumbent upon all of us to remember that, you know, we're all human beings first, and we need to work together to, you know, create the kind of world that we want for our kids. One, and the world that Islam teaches we should try to create is one where every person has the right to believe or not believe as they wish, that there's a separation of religion and state, that there's gender equality and there's racial justice. And that's what drives me in my activism and in my advocacy, and that's what I hope to inspire others to also do.
For someone like me that's, you know, I'm already learning a ton of stuff from you as we're talking, is there different sects of Islam, just like there is with Christianity? Like with Christianity, you have, you know, Catholics, Protestants, Lutherans, Baptists and stuff. Like, does Islam kind of have the same thing, and that's where maybe some of this stuff is getting misconstrued, as different groups have different views of the Quran?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely different sects of Islam, absolutely. And depending on, you know, what part of the world you go to, you'll find, you know, larger proportions of one sect or the other. But really, on understanding the Quran, what's important to remember is that as far as this principle of condemning terrorism, the vast majority of the Muslim world is united that in this approach, that the Quran condemns terrorism. There's really no confusion here. And, you know, Indonesia, the world's largest Muslim majority country, is also one of the more peaceful ones as well. And one of the more peaceful countries of the world, not just among Muslim countries. You know, in many places, the violence rate is significantly lower in Indonesia than it is here in the United States. And that's true of many countries in the Middle East as well. But there's just, you know, an extremist element that gets much more coverage than, you know, Muslims doing normal Muslim things. If I told you that the Muslim community I belong to, the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, is the oldest American Muslim organization, we've been here since 1920, we have tens of thousands of members, and that we've held a blood drive every year on 9/11 to honor the victims of 9/11, that we've even had, we even have an annual blood drive on Capitol Hill where Republicans and Democrats donate blood. This is probably the first you've heard of it.
It absolutely is.
But if some Muslim were to, you know, yell Allahu Akbar and fire a gun in the air, I can guarantee you that he would have 24/7 media coverage for the next week. So that's an uphill battle we're fighting. But, you know, we're going to continue pushing forward with that education. And I think people will realize that, the so-called Islam that extremists espouse is really just their own egos and vain desires. It's not grounded in any kind of education or anything that the Quran teaches or the Prophet Muhammad taught. But they're as extremist and ignorant and bigoted as the KKK or the Lord's Resistance Army or any kind of white supremacist terrorist organization.
Do you think a lot of it too is that we, especially like I said, in Western culture in the United States, that we kind of misconstrue the Middle East and we just associate the Middle East with Islam or with Muslims, whereas correct me if I'm wrong, the religion itself has over like 1 billion members to it. And I mean, they're in large parts of Asia and I mean, just all, you know, in Africa and, you know, Europe, but obviously they're all over the world, but we're focusing so much on just the Middle East. And we seem to think that that's just I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but that's kind of like the hub of like the extremists,
yeah,
or the violence of Islam.
Yeah, I mean, that's the stereotype, right? But people forget the world's largest Muslim majority country is Indonesia. And, Pakistan is also, you know, South Asia. It's not the Middle East. It's also one of the largest Muslim majority countries. India, again, one of the world's largest Muslim populations in a country. There are more Muslims in China than there are in Saudi Arabia. And that tends to blow people's minds as well. In the United States, there are more Arab Christians than there are Arab Muslims. So, you know, there's a lot of stereotypes that we just kind of take for granted. But when you do a bit of a deeper dive, you realize that it's actually not true. But that's where it's so important to get to know a Muslim personally and get to meet with Muslims and have that conversation one-on-one. You know, those bridges, when you break bread, are formed and they're unbreakable. But once you have that distance, then, you know, fear and, you know, misinformations and misconceptions creep in, and you start to have hatred and dislike for someone that you don't know anything about. And so, you know, having the courage to extend your hand and have that conversation, it's a crucial step for, you know, I would say for the security of our country, for the well-being of our country, and also for your own personal well-being. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't like to hate people. I don't like to have dislike in my heart or hatred in my heart for people. I want to find ways to build bridges with people. And so, you know, for what it's worth, from my perspective as a Muslim, as an American, you know, my door is going to stay open. I want to have those conversations, and I hope people do as well. And in my experience, you know, I've been to the most conservative, you know, right-wing churches where, you know, the tension was so thick you could cut it with a knife, but left with some really good friends that I'm still in touch with on an ongoing basis today. And that wouldn't be possible unless we had that conversation, that interaction back and forth.
What would you recommend to, like, what's the easiest way for someone to be able to reach out and, I guess, get to know someone of the Muslim faith? If especially in an area, because, like I said, I live in South Dakota, and it's unheard of, you know? I mean, we don't have much of a variety of, you know, religious culture. It's mainly, you know, just Christian. That's, I mean, when it comes to politics, we're a very red state, and there's just not much of any kind of culture here. I mean, it's really just kind of one thing. But I've also noticed that most of the people around here, I mean, even close friends and family, have a bigoted and narrow-minded view of Muslims. And so how would you recommend someone like them be able to learn more and be able to open their hearts a little bit?
Well, you know, reach out to me. I'll find ways to connect you to Muslims within your vicinity. You can find me on Twitter at MuslimIQ. You can email me. I'm very easy to find. You can listen to my podcast at Recite Islam. You know, getting you in touch with people is the easier part. The hard part is having the initial outreach in the first place. That's really what it comes down to, right? I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, having somebody look at the door, having them walk through the door, two very different things. You know, right now we're showing people, you know, that door that we want them to walk through, but they need to choose to walk through that door. And so my very loving, you know, suggestion to your listeners and to such people is that, you know, take a moment to reach out, and in my view, that would be the Christ-like thing to do. That Jesus most certainly said to love thy neighbor and to reach out and have that very sincere, very genuine exchange, and you'll find, you know, that what you want for your kids is the same thing I want for my kids. I want them to be happy. I want them to be healthy. I want them to feel good about themselves. And I want them to make new friends. And, you know, that's, you know, for example, up and down my street, in my neighborhood, every year around Christmas time, my kids go nuts, not because we celebrate Christmas, but because they get to make little gift baskets with chocolate and with flowers. And we go to each of our neighbors, about 25 of them, and we hand them out one by one. And our kids love it, and the neighbors love it, and they've come to expect it now. So if we're a little bit delayed, we start to get notes like, hey, are you guys doing the same thing again? You know, that it's a really cool thing. And if I'm lazy about it, my kids are now old enough that they drag me out to get it knocked out. So to those listening who have these, you know, misconceptions, you know, I would just say, take that step forward, and I assure you that the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to make a new friend.
And that's definitely something that we could all get behind, I think. So with Christianity and whatnot, one of their core statements. And, you know, I was raised Christian and I was originally raised Catholic, but I've kind of just strayed to having my, I guess, own views. And I don't know if that's good or not. I mean, according to church leaders, it's not and whatnot. But one of the things that one of the arguments so many of them make is that, you know, the only way into heaven is through the acceptance of Jesus Christ. Now, do you believe that, and maybe you can educate me, with Islam, do they have a similar message, or do they have a more broad view saying, like, hey, we don't have to have the same faith to, you know, be, you know, one together in the afterlife?
Yeah. So Islam, the short answer is no. I mean, Islam does not monopolize salvation. In fact, the Quran in numerous places says that surely the Muslims and the Christians and the Jews and the Sabians, who are people of other faiths, whosoever believes in God and the day of judgment and does good deeds shall attain paradise. So the Quran is actually very clear on that God is not this, you know, vengeful, wrathful God that condemns people to hell for eternity. On the contrary, in Islam, you know, our good deeds are for ourselves, the obligation to serve humanity, but ultimately we are saved by grace. And I think this is a misconception in Islam that there's no concept of salvation by grace, but in actuality, in Islam, we are saved by grace, and that's a little bit different than what the what my understanding of Christian theology is, that, you know, you're saved by accepting the blood of Christ. You know, that's a little bit different, because in Islam you don't necessarily need to, you know, accept the, you know, well, you don't need, you, that idea of accepting the blood of Christ doesn't exist in Islam, but the idea that you need to accept God to be saved also doesn't exist, because ultimately God's grace encompasses even the most, you know, sinful person and admits that person into paradise. It's a much longer conversation, but the short answer is that because God's greatest attributes are grace and mercy, that ultimately all people will be admitted to paradise and will continue on that spiritual journey of nearness to God.
See, and just that short answer you gave me, I mean, you've given me much more clarity on that kind of vision, because, you know, that's kind of been one of my own personal beliefs, is that, you know, I mean, be a good person to your neighbor, you know, be, you know, do good things, do selfless things, help out where you can, regardless of the type of person or people that are in your life, be a positive person. And I've had plenty of so-called Christians and whatnot that said, no, that's not it at all. I mean, if you still eat meat during certain time frames, I mean, that's a big no-no. And to me, I've just never understood certain things where, you know, you're condemned for so much. And it's, I mean, just based off what you said, it just seems so much more peaceful in the way I believe God, you know, God works.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the idea that God would condemn somebody to hell for eternity, it's actually a very offensive concept in Islam, because, you know, if God is gracious, if he's truly gracious, then it's impossible for him to condemn somebody to hell for eternity, because that would mean that God's wrath exceeds his grace. And if that's the case, then God isn't gracious. He's wrathful. He's vengeful. And in Islam, the concept of hell is a little bit different than what's traditionally understood. The Quran describes hell as a nursing mother. And what we derive from that, from, you know, additional commentary and from additional verses, is that hell is in fact not just the space of just turmoil and punishment. It's like a hospital in that it's a place of purification, of reformation, of place of cleansing. And so, you know, a good analogy that helped me understand this is that, you know, if somebody has cancer and they need to go through chemotherapy and radiation therapy, and we've all known somebody, or most of us have known somebody that's had to go through cancer treatment, you know, we see how painful that therapy is. We see how, you know, their hair falls out, they become weak, they become nauseous, they throw up. It's a hell. I mean, it literally is hell for them to go through that. But at the end of it, you know, if God willing that treatment is successful and they go into remission and they're cancer free, then they're able to lead a much healthier life than if they allow that cancer to stay in their body. And so the Islamic philosophy of hell is that when somebody commits a sin, and a sin, by the way, is a conscious, deliberate act against God's will. No one is born sinful. We're born innocent and pure, and a sin is a conscious decision we make. That when we commit a sin, we actually create a sort of a cancer in our soul. And that because God is gracious and he's merciful, if we ask for forgiveness, God forgives us because he can forgive. And but if we die in a state of sin, if we die, you know, in a state of committing, you know, many sins, then hell is that period of time, that distance from God, where that you know, the cancer of sin is slowly purged from our soul, and God's grace descends upon us, and eventually we enter, you know, nearness to God, enter paradise. And so, you know, for me as a young person studying faith and studying religion, this is one thing that, you know, though I was born into a Muslim family, my parents encouraged me to really take the time to study other faiths and study other perspectives. And this is one thing that really drew me back to Islam, because for me, once I decided that, yes, it makes sense that God exists, you know, I couldn't find myself believing in a God that would condemn someone to eternal damnation. It just didn't make any sense to me. You know, if somebody, you know, let's say they die when they're 20 years old, you know, or 25 years old, and they were, quote, the wrong religion. You're telling me that for 20 years, of which they were an adult for a couple of years, that for a couple of years of being in a, quote, unquote, wrong religion, they're going to suffer for eternity, you know, millions, billions of years, infinite number of years. It didn't make sense to me. And so that's where my search really led me to understand Islamist perspective. And one that for me was grounded in compassion and grace and mercy, and really drew my heart and my mind towards this perspective.
What would you recommend for someone that wants to have a good understanding, like, of the actual, you know, scripture, the Quran, and the modern beliefs and whatnot? Like, what kind of would you, like, recommend certain resources, like certain books, certain shows, videos, movies, whatever it may be, to help them kind of understand? Because just, like I said, just this half hour that we've, you know, been talking about, I've learned so much more than I've ever, you know, gotten the chance to know about.
Sure. Yeah, there's no shortage of resources. I mean, you know, like I said, you can check out my podcast, Reset Islam. You can also visit a wonderful website, trueislam.com. That has a bunch of resources on there, and it's really well built for an audience who's just looking to learn some basics of Islam without jumping in too deep. And then it offers ways to kind of download some books if you want to learn more. But you know, reach out to me if you're interested as well, and I'd be happy to direct you. I've done some Twitter threads that kind of link some free ebooks that you can download, including the Quran with English translation. So we've got a nice wide variety of resources available. There's really no shortage of that. It just goes back to my earlier point that, you know, showing some of the resources or showing some of the opportunity versus them, you know, embracing that opportunity are two, you know, different choices. And for those who choose to move forward, I really commend them. And, you know, I can assure them that they won't regret it. In fact, they'll feel very good about it as time passes.
So you mentioned earlier as well that one of the things that you're passionate about, some of the activism you do, is also gender equality. Tying that in with Islam, there's been a misconception or a belief that we've been told about in Western culture that women are, you know, basically objects in that culture. Can you explain why that may or that shouldn't be true, or why that isn't true, or is it? How are we misconceiving that?
Well, I mean, it's making sure we separate religion from culture. I mean, if you look at the way countries like Saudi Arabia treat women, it's horrific, and it's highly unjust, and there's no conceivable way you can call that equality. What I would ask people to look at is what Islam actually teaches. And in Islam, you find a robust teaching that promotes gender equality. You know, for starters, the Quran, it rejects the idea that Eve was created from the rib of Adam. It instead says from the very get-go that Adam and Eve were two equal beings created from the same soul. So from the very, very beginning, from the very onset, is this, you know, understanding that we are two equal beings, and we complement one another, we support one another, in beautiful ways. So there's no, gender superiority of one over the other in that sense. Two, the Quran was the very first religion, the first scripture to mandate that women have the right to choose who they want to marry. They have the right to unilaterally divorce. They have the right to own property. They have the right to inherit property. They have the right to keep all money they earn, whereas the husband does not have any right over his wife's income. So, you know, my wife runs her own business. Everything she earns is her own. Everything I earn, you know, half of it she has say over, if not all of it, to be honest. But you know, there are, some deep wisdoms here where a woman's finances are protected and no man has a right to interfere there. I'm a lawyer by training. You know, women in America couldn't become lawyers until the late 1900s. Late 19th century. Late 19th century. And it wasn't until the first, couple of decades of the 20th century that law schools even permitted women to, admission. But in Islam, women were legal scholars 1400 years ago and were well-respected legal scholars, well-respected jurists and judges. And so, you know, I can go on and on, but, I'll even end with this, that right now in the United States, as of the recording of this podcast, the Equal Rights Amendment Act, which would guarantee gender equality under the Constitution, is still not law. Here in 2019 America, the ERA is still not law. And I hope my home state of my current state of Virginia, where I live, becomes the 38th state to ratify it, and it can finally become law. But, you know, we're talking in 2019, according to the U.S. Constitution, men and women aren't equal, whereas the Quran mandated this 1400 years ago. So, you know, I would ask people to certainly be critical of, these draconian regimes like Iran and Saudi Arabia, but just be sure to distinguish that from what Islam actually teaches, because these regimes couldn't be further from what Islam actually teaches.
So why is it that with, you talk about these cultures, like in Saudi Arabia and a lot of these things that we see on the news, and that's its own problem really is, what we get to see, but where it seems like the message that's being sent to us over here is that, the reason they, live the way they live is because of their religion, where, we're being shown that, like I said, women are mistreated and it's because of Islam, and, they hate, everyone over there hates us because there is, Muslims and we're not, so why is it that so many of these political structures and just organizations are either falsely using their religion, or just how did they get so confused on their own religion?
Well, they didn't get confused. They just don't know it, and they manipulate the faith for their own means. And I'll give you an example, a really good example, a very painful example. Last year, the United Nations reported that due to the U.S. arms trade and funding, the weapons that Saudi Arabia is using, 85,000 Yemeni children starved to death. 85,000. Now, imagine if you're a Yemeni father or a Yemeni mother, and you knew that this Western superpower is giving the arms and the bombs necessary to continue to bomb you and your family, and as a result, you're watching your children starve to death right in front of you because they can't get any food because everything's been blown to kingdom come. Now, are you going to care what religion somebody is at that point? Are you going to care what their motivations are? No, you're going to be furious that because these people are bombing me and my children, I'm watching my son, my daughter starve to death. You know, this is the reality that I think people don't seem to understand, that this is not like this, the Quran says this or the Bible says that. No, this is greed and corruption. that's causing this. This is a lack of justice. It's a lack of basic humanity and decency. And to blame religion, to scapegoat religion, you know, it really lets the people committing these atrocities off the hook, because it lets them say, well, you know, the religion said it, so therefore they had to. No, it's not that simple. These are deliberate actions. These are deliberate decisions that people made, that, you know, we are going to fund this regime to bomb. And yeah, these children, they may die, but you know what? That's not important to us. It's that callousness that's causing a lot of these concerns and a lot of these issues from happening. And I think that's where I want people to really look beyond just what they hear in the media and really put yourself in the shoes of those parents. I can give you 1,000 more examples. I mean, I've written on this. I've spoken on this. I've lectured on this, you know, across the country and across the world. But, you know, I want you to put yourself in the shoes of that parent who's watching his son or daughter die because they can't get food. And it's because this country continues to bomb you for, you have no idea why. I mean, how would you respond? And so, you know, when we buy into these media narratives of, you know, well, they hate us for our freedom, or it's, you know, us versus them, or these political narratives, then we're effectively enabling that type of genocide from happening. And so I would ask my fellow Americans to push past that rhetoric and really reach out and look at the humanitarian aspect of this, demand better of our elected officials, and ensure that we're not creating a world for our children where they have to inherit these problems that we're suffering through right now.
You brought up a heartbreaking point. I mean, we see a lot of times, and we don't see it a lot in the mainstream media, but we see it a lot in independent news sources or just firsthand accounts, you know, via social media, that we learn about these things. Like you brought up the bombings in Yemen, and we see, you know, the civil wars fought in the different countries like Syria and whatnot, that, you know, we're seeing just these tragedies that are happening within these cultures, within the borders of these places. And the only word is just, it's a heartbreaking thing. And like you said, like, you have to look past. Don't worry about what religion these people are, because I'm sure your life changed quite a bit, you know, when you had your first kid, that you start, you know, putting yourself in more places like that. You know, it's, you don't have same, mm-hmm. quite the same feeling of, you know, watching these things happen on the news. And, but then once, you know, you have a baby, once you have your own kids and family, like, you start taking these things into different considerations and whatnot. Sure. And I mean, your heart grows a little bit bigger. And to me, it's arrogance if you're thinking, well, you know, these people are Middle Eastern, these people are Muslim, these people are whatever. It's not my problem. It's, to me, when I hear stuff like that, it's like, well, don't go to your church this Sunday because you're already being hypocritical. Don't go to your whatever, you know, and that's a lot of the culture that, I mean, I've seen personally, is that, you know, the people go to churches on Sunday, but still have the most heartless things to say and heartless actions against, you know, these things that are going on across the world.
Right. And I think that's where, you know, the hypocrisy is a universal religion. And you see Muslims acting hypocritically, you see Christians acting hypocritically, you see Jews, atheists, Hindus acting hypocritically. And you take the hypocrites of all these faiths and ideologies and put them in a room, and they're going to seem a lot like one another. But, you know, you take an honest and good Christian, an honest and good Jew, an honest and good Muslim, put them in the same room, and you're going to see them get along really well together as well. Because the human condition is the same. And once we recognize that, you know, that human condition is the same, then you can take an observant Jew, you can take an observant Christian, observant Muslim, and realize how similar their goals really are and how well they get along together. And it's that humanitarian aspect of it that I think we need to do a better job of finding in one another. And when we do that, then not only do we create more peace amongst ourselves, but, you know, as a parent, you'll appreciate this, we create a much better future to give to our children. And for, you know, for anyone who's a parent, or even an uncle or an aunt, you know that your perspective changes. And now every action you take is, how do I ensure a better and more productive and progressive and, you know, loving environment for my kids in the future? And that calculation can't be, let me go bomb somebody else's kid. It can't. It has to be, let me find ways to ensure that all kids are truly protected, because that's what kids deserve. They deserve nothing less than that.
You do a lot of activism. You do have a lot of missions. Like, so outside of just trying to teach the guy like me that doesn't have a lot of, I guess, education on the subject of Islam and whatnot, what other projects are you kind of focusing your life towards right now? Like, what other passions do you have to try to, you know, help better the world right now?
I was very thoughtful of you. You know, I mean, I like to be available for these kinds of conversations. You know, I'm typically on a couple of podcasts a week, and I enjoy them because I see as opportunities to plant seeds of positivity. I've got some more writing projects that I'll be announcing soon. I've got certainly the podcast that I've mentioned a few times. You know, my wife's got her own business that I help support. I volunteer with this really phenomenal charity called Humanity First. It's a worldwide organization in 50 countries, and they specialize in disaster relief, you know, like first responders when there's a flood or a hurricane or a tornado or an earthquake or a tsunami. But they also do some amazing work in, you know, free heart surgeries, free maternal care, free eye surgeries, I mean, you name it. So I spend a lot of time, I've traveled, you know, to various parts of Africa for that, and South America, I'll be going soon as well. So, you know, I try to keep busy, you know, and again, it's motivated by my faith as a Muslim, because as a Muslim, it's my responsibility to serve all humanity to the best of my ability. And if I'm not doing that, then I'm failing in my primary responsibility. So, you know, I could go on, but I think the main point is that I try to ensure that my life is focused around how I can serve those around me. And I feel like I'm never quite doing a good enough job. And so, you know, for me, that means I need to keep working harder.
See, and that's extremely humble of you. You know, I just listened to you list off all the things that you're working on and doing, and, you know, you're serving your community, you're helping out where you can, and it's just you're a very active member of society, where, you know, it makes me feel bad, because I mean, my wife could ask me to take out the trash, and I'm like, ugh, like, I it just, that seems like a lot of work right now, like, I just can't pull myself to do it. So, and a bit, yeah, you know, joking aside, I mean, that's another thing that I'm sure you and I both are would like people to know, is that people of the Islamic religion, you know, Muslims are having, they do so much more than what the media portrays them to do. And I mean, like you said, you're serving your community, you're a family man, you're doing so much for your family, your neighbors and whatnot, where people don't get to see that. People don't get to see what people like you and other members of your faith, you know, are doing positively and are doing, where, like I said, there's other people like me that are like, well, you know, I recognize myself as this, but I'm not going to do much because I'm just, you know, whatever. You know, I have a mindset, not a good one. I need to be a better person too. But it's been a humble conversation to have with you too, to be able to learn so much in this short period of time here.
Well, you know, I mean, I appreciate that. And that learning is, like I said, it's a lifelong journey. It's not something that should ever stop. But, you know, for those who undertake it, I commend you, because sometimes it takes overcoming some fears to do it. And those who overcome that fear and jump forward, I wish them nothing but immense success and happiness.
So to kind of wrap things up, we're kind of reaching that hour mark right now, getting close to it anyways. So tell my viewers, my listeners, you know, tell them everything you got that you work on. So tell them, you know, the name of your podcast one more time. Tell them your books, because I said you have some books out and I didn't get the names written down, so I was a terrible introduction for that. But, you know, tell them everything that that they can check out about you. Tell them how they can follow you, you know, social media, you know, just tell them whatever you want to tell them.
Well, I think I'll just say two things, because it's going to get, and the rest of it can come from those two things. You can follow me on Twitter at MuslimIQ. And you can check out our podcast at Recite Islam. It's available on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, you know, wherever you listen to podcasts, it's available across the board. Recite, we picked that name as in, like, take a second look at Islam. contrary to what people have heard. But yeah, check us out on the podcast and check us out on Twitter and the rest of the stuff. We're happy to share. And, you know, don't hesitate to reach out. We're here to build those bridges of understanding, and we're grateful for the opportunity to dialogue.
Kasim, once again, thank you so much for coming on here and, you know, joining me. This is a small time podcast. You know, I'm just still in the very early stages, still building up the audience. So thank you for taking time out of your day to join me and educate not only myself, but hopefully a bunch of my listeners as well. I really hope that in the future I can have you back on and we can talk about some other subjects or maybe just dive in deeper. Who knows? But once again, Thank you for coming on.
No, Adam, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you once again, guys, for listening to the Break It Up podcast. Look at the show notes and check out all the things that we put in there. We'll give you links to Kasim's work, his Twitter and whatnot. Also, you guys can find me on Twitter at Podcast Break. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/breakituppodcast. Come over to that page, give it a like, and subscribe to that, and join the community. We can talk about all kinds of things. You can also find me on Instagram at breakituppodcast. And if you want to email me at adamjewell@breakituppodcast.com. And any of that stuff is available on my website, www.breakituppodcast.com. Thank you guys once again for joining me, and I hope you guys had a good time, and we will see you in a couple weeks. Thank you.